Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Respondent Harold J. Ruttenberg at 307 South Dithridge Street, The Atrium Apartments, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Interviewers Rhea C. Lehman and Florence Joseph, February 24, 1986. We know from our research, Mr. Ruttenberg.
I call myself Ruttenberg.
Ruttenberg.
Yeah.
We will do that from here on. We know from our research, Mr. Ruttenberg, just how rich and varied your career has been, and we're interested in discussing it all with you. But for purposes of oral history, we'd like to begin at the beginning, shall we say, with your roots. Could you tell us something about your family background? Could we start with your grandparents? Your paternal grandparents, where did they come from?
They came from Kovno, Lithuania.
I see. And your grandmother also?
On my father's side?
Yes, the paternal side, yes.
They were from Kovno, Lithuanian. They were a Lithuanian Jewish community.
They were married there, were they?
Yes.
Did they come to this country?
Yes.
Approximately what time? Do you have any idea?
Well, my father was born in 1880, and he was the first member of the family that got here, and he brought over his parents and his brothers, and he got here in 1898.
I see.
So it would have been post that period.
Where did these paternal grandparents settle then?
In the greater Pittsburgh area.
And on the maternal side, your grandmother, you say, was born in the same area.
Your grandmother on my mother's side, or my father's side? On my mother's side.
Yes.
Maternal. Okay. My mother's mother was born in Odessa, Russia.
I see.
And my mother was born there and came over as a child when she was 3 or 4 years old.
Your mother's father?
He died in Russia. And her mother came over with two young children as a widow.
I see. And where did they settle?
In St. Paul, Minnesota.
Were these grandparents an influence in any way in your early years?
The grandmother on my mother's side was, certainly, yeah.
I see. Now, your father was born?
He was born in a little village near Kovno, Lithuania.
See. And he came here? You mentioned the date, would you?
Yeah, well, he was rounded up. He joined the Russian army with a couple friends about his age in order to get a warm overcoat, he always said, and a pair of boots.
I see.
And then they went by foot to Hamburg, Germany, and got on boats. And my father came into the country through San Francisco, where he left the boat and went his way over to the east. And these three men, till the day they died, they always were very close to each other.
And recount the experience, I guess.
Yeah, they're very close to each other, and they all followed the same pursuit. They had stores in coal mining towns and small villages around western Pennsylvania. Although my father, before he had a store, was a peddler, and he peddled clothing out to the farmers headquartered out of St. Paul, Minnesota. And he covered the Minnesota and the Dakotas and parts of Iowa. He'd go out with a car full of merchandise and sleep at the farmers' houses, and got to be friendly and with them, and they were regular customers, and they'd place orders for him to bring things back the next time. And then he left when I was 7 years old in 1921. Why? He left St. Paul, Minnesota, and came to Charleroi, Pennsylvania, where he opened up a store with shoes and clothing for men, women, children.
To digress a minute, I'm curious, how did he manage to join the army and leave?
They just deserted.
I see.
They just deserted. The Russian the Russian army wasn't all that close, you know, wasn't all that well organized. No, they got in, they got their clothes and their boots, and they left.
Well, that was smart. What about your mother? Where was she born?
She was born in Odessa and was 3 or 4 years old when she came here.
Where did she settle then?
St. Paul.
In St. Paul. That's apparently where they met?
Yes.
And do you know when they married?
Yeah, they were married on January 1st, 1911, in St. Paul.
And they remained in St. Paul for a while?
Until 1921, when they moved to Charleroi, Pennsylvania.
I see. And how many children did they have?
Well, I had an older brother and a younger brother.
I see. Are your brothers here in Pittsburgh?
Well, my older brother lived here in Pittsburgh until he died in 1970. He died in 1978.
What was his name?
Melton.
Melton.
Melton M.
And your younger brother?
Stanley. My younger brother Stanley lives in Bethesda, Maryland.
And what is his occupation?
He's an economist, and he was Assistant Secretary of Labor under under Kennedy and Johnson. And then he created a consulting firm that his daughter now runs in Washington.
Is there anything unusually significant about the children of your brothers that we ought to note here?
No, I don't know what you really mean by that. They're normal. They all married and had children.
Good enough. Your parents are both deceased?
Yes.
Now, when were you born?
I'm born on 22nd of May, 1914.
And that was in the town where your parents originally settled then?
St. Paul, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
In St. John's Hospital.
Can you tell us something about your early years then, Mr. Rutenberg? What was the religious atmosphere in your home? Would you describe it as Orthodox, conservative, Reform?
Well, the Reform movement hadn't gotten much to the immigrants, made up the Jewish community of immigrants in St. Paul and Minneapolis. So I would say that it was essentially Orthodox. Essentially Orthodox.
Was your family active in the synagogue, in the community?
Of course, I don't have any recall much about what went on during the first 7 years of my life in that regard, except that I did go to cheder, which in Hebrew, you know, is a word for room. So I did go to cheder in a synagogue when I was 3 or 4 years old. Until I left. Until I left for St. Paul for Pittsburgh area for Charleroi.
I see. Then you were later, subsequently, bar mitzvahed in Charleroi.
I never was bar mitzvahed.
You never were. I see. The economic situation in your early years, would you describe it as comfortable or stressful?
Never in want. Never in want.
Was it a matriarchal or patriarchal household? Who was the disciplinarian in your early years?
Well, I'd say my mother ran the household, certainly when my father was peddling and away at extended periods of time when they lived in St. Paul. And then when he had a store, my mother ran the store with him. And I'd say my mother was a more influential parent, so far as its influence on the children were concerned.
In the early years, were there any cultural influences in your home, music, theater?
Oh, yes. My mother's mother was an educated woman, which was unusual, from Odessa.
Yes.
And so we had music, and I can remember even before we left St. Paul, my mother buying a violin for a new immigrant who had come to town, and she sponsored him. And so my mother was a great lover of music, and I learned to appreciate classical music from her.
Did she buy you a fiddle?
Yeah, I played the violin until I was 14. I took up the trumpet and I played that till I was about 18. And I've been listening to music ever since.
Well, you had a good background. Do you have any recollections of the, well, say Charleroi later, the community where you lived, in terms of the, was it an active political community? Was it predominantly Gentile?
Well, the Charleroi, when we moved there, it did not have a synagogue, and my father was one of the group that helped build a small synagogue in Charleroi.
Orthodox still?
Well, it wasn't all that orthodox, but they did wear kippot or yarmulke, as you say in Yiddish, and they wore talit. And I remember during the high holidays, my father and other men would be in the back room playing chess. So it was my father's turn to go up to the bima. He had me sit back there and watch. Nobody moved his chess set. Although he, I'm sure, remembered where every piece was, and so he wasn't all that observant.
But he was a factor in having a synagogue built.
Yes, yes. There were several families there that got together. They were all merchants, and maybe one doctor among them. Mm-hmm. And they built a little synagogue. It still stands there.
Do you recall any anti-Semitism in that community in your early years?
In Charleroi?
Yes.
Not so much in Charleroi, not till I moved to Nemacolin in Pennsylvania in 1924 when I was 10 years old.
I see.
And we lived, we had the big store on the hill, the top of the hill, down which you went into Nemacolin in Pennsylvania, a coal mining subsidiary of Youngstown Sheet and Tube Company. There, of course, you had all the immigrants from Central Europe and England and Ireland. They ran into a substantial amount of anti-Semitism.
How old were you when you moved to Nemacolin?
10. 1924. I was 10 years old.
I see. How long were you there?
You left in 1931 when I was 17.
So you spent many years there, your early years.
Yes, I went to grade school in the coal mining town until 1900 and until 1928, when I was 14 years old. When I was finished with grade school, I did not go to high school. My father sent all three of the boys to Massanutten Military Academy in Woodstock, Virginia. And so I was there from age 14 to 17, which had been 1928 to 1931. I graduated from Massanutten in 1931. It only took me 3 years to go through there because I took some summer courses one summer at W&J at Washington Jefferson in Washington, PA.
Well, you did go to elementary school in Nemacolin.
That's right.
I see.
That's right.
In retrospect, was it a good quality education?
I don't know. I became literate. There were some fairly good teachers there. I even remember the names of two of them, Mrs. Hamilton and Mrs. Essinger.
They do make an impression.
They took an interest in you. As I recall it, my brothers and myself, we were sort of outstanding in the class, but partly because of the competition we had.
You're being very modest.
We came from literate families, uh-huh. And many of the students were from coal miners' families, where only book was the Bible that was never read.
Now then, you went to Massanutten for how many years? Was that 4 years?
3 years.
3 years, I see.
28, 29, 29, 30, 30, 31.
Were there special teachers there?
Yes. Oh, my, yes. I learned a lot and learned a lot of discipline there and learned how to organize myself. It was a great influence on me, Massanutten Military Academy. It made me efficient.
Your brothers went there also.
So my older brother went there for 1 year, and my younger brother went there for 5 years.
I see. Were there any extracurricular activities that would have foretold your interests later on?
Yeah, well, I played in the orchestra, I sang in the glee club, I played in the band. Every year there was a parade up at Winchester, Virginia, the Apple Blossom Festival, and I played the trumpet in the band there. And then I was on the debating team. The debating team were divided between the Poes and the Jeffersons.
I see.
And I was a Poe. And we debated various issues, and I had a very good teacher there, Dr. Cobb, C-O-B-B. He taught me alliteration, taught me how to pronounce words, and taught me how to say lovely lady of the lake instead of ugly lady of the ache. And I got a good deal. I got much, much more out of Mass, nothing that I possibly could have gotten in a public high school.
It was really a significant influence then.
Oh, yeah, great, great. So, very much so.
It wasn't the usual thing for parents of your period to send their children away to a prep school, was it? Your father was sort of ahead of his time.
Well, my older brother was going to public high school in Carmichael's, Pennsylvania, a couple miles from Nemeco. And he'd come home talking about farm things and other things that his classmates were interested in. My father and mother got kind of impatient with that and searched around for a private school to where they could send the boys. And fortunately, we went there in 1928, and my younger brother started there in 1930, so it was before the Depression came on and crimped the style of most families, but it never crimped our style. My father had no difficulty continuing us in the private school in 31. My younger brother went there till 1936, I think, or 35.
Were there many Jewish students there?
Yes, yes there were, but we were the only Jewish students. Well, there were a couple other Jewish students from the area, many of them from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania proper. And then there were students from Brownsville, Pennsylvania, the Levies. And Landau was from Pittsburgh. Goldstein was from Pittsburgh. Then there were a number of Jewish students there that came from Manhattan and the big metropolitan area, greater Manhattan, who were there from broken families, you know, divorced families. So of a 250 student body, why, there were a goodly number of at least 50 Jewish boys there. They're from down in Mound City, there was a boy by the name of Sklar, who became a professional football player after his college years.
You didn't experience any anti-Semitism in that setting, did
you? Oh my, yes, indeed.
You did?
Oh, sure. In Nemeco in Pennsylvania, when I was maybe 13 years old or 14, I started to take boxing lessons by mail from Jim Corbett. Jim Corbett was a heavyweight champion for a while, and I learned how to fight. I did a lot of fighting.
Well, there were 50 of you, you say, so you had some company there.
No, they weren't. There weren't many fighters among the ones. The Scar, the football player, was one, but the rest of them were a bunch of sissies with silk pants from the East. They were just amazed that I'd stand up to someone bigger than myself and take them on.
How did the anti-Semitism manifest itself?
Well, in every possible kind of form, you know, you're a kike and a Jew and all that sort of thing. And they'd try to pull all kinds of stunts on you, but they didn't get very far with me and my older brother. My older brother was a slugger too. And they come to respect us, and they sort of laid off us. And then we'd have to go to the defense of the other Jewish boys. I went down to the 50th reunion of my younger brother. I didn't get to my own 50th reunion because I had surgery that year and didn't make the trip. And I ran into a big fellow named Stan Sokowicz, a big Polish boy from over in Philadelphia area, who became an All-American tackle for University of Pennsylvania. And he was bigger than I was. He was bigger than I was, but I wasn't small. And he says, Rudy. They call me Rudy. That's how we got our name as Rutenberg instead of Ruttenberg. He called me Rudy. Rudy 1, Rudy 2, Rudy 3. And he says that he never thought I could, he says, I was surprised how hard you could hit. He says, I can still feel it.
You made an impression.
Yeah, but he was a few years older than I was. I was then about 70, I guess, and he was must have been 76 or 77. And but I learned from this Jim Corbett thing, I learned how to hit, you know.
Paid off.
Yeah, there's a difference between hitting and a person that isn't trained in hitting just pushes instead of hits. Mm-hmm. Big difference.
In these early communities that you lived in, Mr. Rutenberg, were the health services adequate?
I would not say so. I would not say so. I broke my right arm cranking a truck, and the bone got reset crooked, which always enabled me to throw a pretty good straight ball, but I never could throw a curve ball. And I had a dentist who opened up a tooth and never filled it back up, and that led eventually to my losing 4 or 5 of my top front teeth. So I wouldn't think that that was inimical in Carmichael's area. The level of competence was low.
Was there a hospital?
So there is a hospital today in Carmichael's. There was an infirmary type of hospital in the coal town itself. I don't recall ever having gone there. We always went to Carmichael's, which is 2-3 miles away, to Dr. Teagarden. And he took care of us. He set my arm crooked.
You spent your adolescent years really then in Massanutten, didn't you?
That's right. In Woodstock, Virginia, 30 miles south of Winchester in the Shenandoah Valley. Beautiful, great country.
Well, were you involved in the community at all, or did you just remain on the school campus?
Well, we lived on campus, and the school had a big farm, and we'd spend a lot of time on the farm. And then we'd go pack riding. We had horses there. We had polo ponies that were given to the school. It was an ROTC, Reserve Officers Training Corps school, and we'd pack on horses and go out for a week or 10 days in the mountains and lived in tents and so on. So I got exposed to a good deal of country life, outdoor living.
But no girls?
No, there were no girls. It was no girls in the school. But we would go to dances over to Hood College, and we'd go down to Sweet. That was over near Hood. Was over near in Maryland, I think, near Baltimore, near Hagerstown, somewhere in there. And then we'd go down to Sweetbriar College, which was a girls' school down near Roanoke. I remember those two names, but there were others also. And then we would have dances at the school, and they'd bring in girls from girls' schools. And we were boys that were brought into girls' schools for dances. So that was the extent of social life with the other sex.
But overall, it sounds like it was a very pleasant experience and a very positive one.
Yes, it was beneficial to all three of the boys, more so to myself and my younger brother. My older brother only had 1 year there.
Did some of your later career interests begin to surface here, or did that?
Well, you see, the coal mining town, where the men went to work before the sun rose and came back from work after the sun had set, and they'd go for days on days and never see the sun, that made a real sharp impression on me. So that, I would say that my interest in the labor movement grew out of that and, direct connection.
Now for the college years.
My first 2 years I went to American University in Washington, D.C. I was 31, 32, 32, 33, and then the last 2 years I went to Pitt here and graduated.
Was your family living in Pittsburgh by that time?
Yes, yes.
I see. Mm-hmm. What made you transfer? Because the family was here? Or?
from American University to Pitt?
Yes.
God, I don't really remember why. Let's see, I was there at 31, 32, 33. I guess it was my mother's influence. My older brother went to Pitt, and he graduated in 33. I guess maybe he had an influence in getting me to come back to Pitt. Then my younger brother went to Pitt also. All three of us graduated from Pitt.
I see. Was it a good experience?
Pitt?
College years, both of them.
Oh, yes, because I became active in the labor movement while I was in college here at Pitt.
Were there any professors that had a significant influence here at the university?
Yes, there were four, two most outstanding. Most outstanding one was Ralph E. Turner.
Ralph Turner, I knew him.
And he was a history professor who was fired for making unkind comments about Andy Mellon. And Bryn Hovde, who was also a history professor. And they had a great influence on me. And then in economics, well, you had McKay. He lived to be 96 or 97, died just a few years ago. He was economics professor. And then we had Graper in political science. And we had Daugherty in economics. So they all had, they had a good faculty.
Good faculty. And
they had Hunt in English. And I was on the debating team, and you had Dick Murphy, married to Tessie Kahn. And we had he had a goatee, his name slips me at the moment, who was the head of the speech department. And I'd come well prepared because I'd had diction and speech at
Massanutten.
Yes, and I'd picked up a bit of a southern accent, and Dr. Dick Murphy and Tessie Murphy, and then the head of the speech department gave me exercises to cure the southern accent, which I can fall back into just in a jockey.
Well, it's a lazy form of speech. It's easy to fall back into it.
I wouldn't say it was a lazy form of speech. It's just a different form of speech. It's unkind to the southern accent.
Well, it's sort of a slur, in my opinion.
But hey, it's more musical.
I see. Did you further develop your interests in college that led to your career?
Oh, sure, because when I was a junior at the University of Pittsburgh, I became secretary of the steelworkers, the rank-and-file steelworkers, and went to the White House, met with Fannie Perkins, Senator Wagner, when I was 20 years old, and threatened a steel strike in the summer of 1934.
Well, how did that tie in with your college influence?
How did that tie in with the college influence? Well, in 1933, when I entered Pitt, well, I got a job for $15 a week on the National Youth Administration going around interviewing steel workers who had organized into company unions under the Blue Eagle, under Roosevelt. Dr. Daugherty was head of the labor part of a study of the economics of the iron and steel industry, which is later published in two volumes by Brookings Institute. And I went around interviewing steelworkers in Duquesne and Wharton and Braddock and Homestead and Vandergrift and Apollo. And so whenever they met in convention in the spring of 1934, I was the only one there that knew them from different places. Also the only one there that had a typewriter and that could type. So I became secretary of the rank and file group. And by a majority vote, they took control of the old Amalgamated Association of Iron, Steel, and Tin Workers. And then we went to Washington and threatened a steel strike. And there were four very experienced men who were the brain trust for us. I didn't at age 20, I didn't have the know-how, but I had the ability to listen. And there were four men, of great each of whom were very prominent in their own way and very able. One was Stephen Rauschenbusch, who later became who during that time became a high official of the Interior Department in Washington. Another was Heber Blankenhorn, who was a general in the Second World War and a colonel in the First World War. And he was an assistant to Senator Wagner, set up the Wagner-Lieber Act. And then there was Harvey O'Connor, who was an author. O'Connor, Blankenhorn, Rauschenbusch, there was a fourth one. Slips my mind at the moment. Who the fourth one was? That just slips my mind. It's all written down. I kept notes of that period from when the union took control. The rank and file took control of the Steelworkers Union in 1934 in May, or April it was, or April or May. I have detailed notes of everything going on for the better part of a year, and that they're on file at Penn State.
When did you graduate, Pitt?
In 1935, June 35.
These were Depression years when you were in college.
Yes.
Was there any difficulty in financing your education?
Well, my father died in December of 1933, and it didn't leave my mother wealthy, but it left her comfortable enough. She was never in want, and we worked. I remember Kitty and I, we got a dollar waiting on tables at Syria Mosque, plus our dinner.